And I found that in a group called The Move. Remember The Move? Well, this is a song by The Move that I played at that time, as did the station, called Mist on a Monday Morning. I felt it was terrifically musical and fit the station's sound.
I awake at dawn at the crack of dawn with dewdrops on my feet. As I rise up to greet the morning, nothing much to eat. Every breath I take seems to make my body ache. My own
That's the group called The Move, and they're a British group, and they were very, very popular at the time, particularly in Great Britain. And I thought and continue to think that the highlight of the station, or certainly one of them, is Your British Friday Afternoon. And I, at that time, I wouldn't miss that British program if I were paid to miss it. I just simply wouldn't miss it. It was, it taught me music. You knew far more about this field than I. My expertise lay in popular music, jazz, classical music, and show music.
He's still very active, you know. They don't use Move now, probably because it had something to do with the other members of the group, but Wood, Roy is very, and he's done Wizard, he's done a number of other things.
Oh, sure.
But he's always experimenting, which
absolutely
is mark of a good musician.
I totally agree with you.
Speaking of marks of... if I take a second guess in the back of my mind, but I'd rather have you tell the audience, but I do know you well enough to know your first love is, of course, writing. And it was a year ago this past May that you left the station, the first week in May. And maybe I should just ask you why.
Why I left the station?
Yeah.
My honest feeling was at that time, and continues to be, that after 9 years or 8.5 years of being with the station, well, first of all, I was getting bored. I was not getting bored with the music so much as my routine within the music. Although I was getting tired of hearing certain records over and over again, which happens to people who work daily. Now, we hear Jumpin' Jack Flash every hour. You and I, you know, but out there, people hear it once every couple of weeks. It comes as big news. But to hear it repeated, and then to hear my own voice within the confines of that record, and I'm using that record as an example of things that we played on a continuous basis and should continue to play. Outstanding music by the Stones or by people of quality. But in point of fact, I feel I was becoming bored with the routine of, and it was also becoming very mechanical. And I also think I was suffering on the air as a result of it, that I was not working as hard as I had in the past when all of us were fresh, and certainly when I was. And there are ways to cut corners in every job, and I learned those ways. And I don't feel that's a way to conduct a radio program where you go before literally hundreds of thousands of people. Now, ratings reflect maybe 80, 90,000 per quarter hour, but they don't reflect people in automobiles. They don't reflect people in stores, you know? They don't reflect portable radios at beaches. There are hundreds of thousands of people that you address daily, Scott.
Campus.
Oh, they don't even go into dormitories. That's another story entirely. Think of the campuses. I mean, New York City is a campus, just very much the way Boston is a campus. Boston is smaller, so it's more noticeable. But New York is a campus, and ratings don't provide for Hartley Hall at Columbia, you know, or anything at CCNY, or anything anywhere. And I also made a decision that I wanted to live in the desert and work on a complicated book that I was writing, and I found it difficult to do both things. To write a book of a complex nature, which happily is seeing some light near the end of the tunnel now, and at the same time conduct an honorable radio program. I don't honestly think I felt that I was drifting into the dishonorable, but I felt and feel in retrospect that I was drifting into the lazy. The lazy means I wasn't listening to my program. And if I wasn't listening, how could I expect other people to listen? And I felt that a good year before I left. And I also feel, Scotty, that, of course, you have a double duty at WNAW-FM. You're the program director of the station, which is a constantly aggravating and at the same time creative position, as well as the guts of the station from 2 to 6. For myself and my program, I felt, hey, that's enough already. That's enough Jumpin' Jack Flash. That's enough Eric Clapton. I don't want to hear them for a while, you know? I just really don't. I've heard them every day, every night, day in and day out. Let's do something different. Let's change a little. I was unencumbered by the financial necessity to support a family. I was unencumbered by alimony. I was unencumbered by financial obligation to anyone but myself. And I felt it was the time to grasp the opportunity to move what I considered to be forward. And my feelings about WNAW-FM are deeply, deeply rooted and enormously moving to me, as well you know.
Your book, in other words, the time that you've taken off, you've almost completed that book then. Do you have a title?
Yeah, the book is called Private Thoughts from the Equator. Let me ask you what you think that means. If you saw that on a book and didn't know me, or my name wasn't on it, Private Thoughts from the Equator, a novel, what would that mean to you, Scotty?
I would think probably you again have, well, my first thoughts would be whoever the author was. It's hard for me to answer because I know you.
But what feeling do you get from that title?
I would think you're going to do something about your life.
Well, wait a minute. Forget me. Forget me. My name
Private
isn't on
thoughts.
The book. You see that? Private Thoughts from the Equator. What does that mean to you?
It's down below. The equator is. No, I don't think... Actually, I do know, so I shouldn't... we've discussed very briefly some of it. It would be unfair to now for me to answer the question since I do have a
You know something?
I
forgot that.
Yeah.
Due to the alcoholic nature of our conversation, which wasn't short at all.
Right.
But I forgot that we've had this conversation.
But it was some time ago when one of your visits to the city here when you came in and we talked
yes, it
about
was.
It.
Yes, it was.
Because I was very curious to the progress, and I know you told me at one time you had a hard time for a while and then you got back into it.
I had a very hard time,
you.
And I've had a very hard time working on it for the first part of this year. Due to some personal complications, but I feel that I've overcome those and working towards a conclusion of the book. And the title means, or at least what I hope it means, the equator, as you very well know, is the point on our planet which is equidistant from the poles, the north and south. It's right there in the middle. And what I'm trying to talk about in this book, which will be published by Doubleday late next year, is the point on our personal maps, our emotional territory that's equidistant from the euphoric highs and despairing lows that we all experience. In other words, the eye of a storm where we can exist as witnesses to our own behavior. And that's one of the many themes of the book. Others are ventriloquism and loneliness and disruption and terror.
Does it have anything to do with half your life?
Oh, I don't know. I feel that, you know, there's certain aspects of my life have contributed. But fiction is fiction. And I often see novelists asked questions like you've just asked me, say on television or on radio, no. Well, I don't believe that. Everyone who writes obviously uses what they know. I mean, the classic statement to young writers is write what you know. And whatever it is that I know is going into this first novel of mine and went into the collection of short stories. But the progress of the book is encouraging to me, and I hope it's received well. I know that it is enormously controversial, and I enjoy rereading the parts that are absolutely frozen and finished, and anticipate the entire finished product with considerable pleasure.
Late next year.
I would say that.
About a year away.
October
then.
Or November. Mm. Oh, but that is a minute in publishing circles. I would say that the October or November of 1978, published by Doubleday, and that's what I've been spending most of my time on. And I've made a record album of my father's songs, and that's about it.
This is something else I was going to ask you about the album. I have a kind of a tear sheet of what the cover will be, Alone Together. Jonathan Schwartz sings Arthur Schwartz, and your father, of course, has written.
Yeah, just as briefly as possible. My father, of course, a songwriter, has written a lot of American popular music, Dancing in the Dark, and as a matter of fact, he wrote That's Entertainment. And I've have always thought of myself as a kind of a derivative singer, somewhere between Sinatra and Mel Torme, and I was invited to make an album and have done so. It'll be out next month, and I think it's okay. And what the best thing about it is that I'm surrounded by some of the best jazz musicians in the country. The songs are good, and I feel I sing them without mutilating them. But that's just, that's a lot of fun. And as I say, the album will be out next month. The thing, basically speaking, is the book that I'm working on. And I'd like to ask you something. How has the music on this station changed since I left, if at all?
Well, I would say probably most notable from the beginning up to now, and even when you left, there is more music now. A lot more.
Wouldn't that mean that there was a lot of additionally more music that was just musically and intellectually unacceptable?
No. For instance, there are a great deal of talented musicians who never really ventured into the realm of what might be considered contemporary. We'll take jazz as an example, the Herbie Hancocks and those who are now, each and every one of them, or collectively with several of them, are coming out with very good albums that people should hear, that is a closer blend to something that's pleasing to the ear, whatever field, whether it's jazz or a touch of Latin or the country music that infiltrates constantly, whether group or individually and all, and there's just more of it. There is more of it, and the reason is obvious, because there's been a great deal of success in the past. A person can say, I will try, I will write, I will sing, I will play, because I know there is a future, and there's income, and there is something ahead for me if I'm good and if I work at it, and so all these people have been doing this. And so now our walls are getting more full and the rack and more new product. And
Scotty, aside from the Beatles and aside from the Stones and aside from Dylan, I always felt that the two most significant artists at the station exposed for many, many reasons were Jimi Hendrix and Joni Mitchell. How do you feel about it?
Well, yeah, I think I'm always quite careful to now. My list would be quite extensive. Earlier in the afternoon, Jonathan, I did just a touch of poetry, The Poets, a series that I had done, and only the theme of New York. And I had to include things. I mean, I felt it was necessary. Phil Oakes, who at that time picked up this awful New York story of the Genovese girl and wrote this unbelievable bit of poetry and put it to a song, the indifference and that sort of thing that exists, all those things. It'd be so hard, and listening to all these people to really say this. I think probably from an attention standpoint and up to and long after Jimmy's untimely death, Hendrix has always been a superstar. Joni Mitchell always will be, probably first of all because of her pen, and then her talent as a singer too came along after the fact.
You know something, Scotty? I think that the two most tragic deaths, with all due respect to Janis Joplin and Jim Morrison and others, in American music were George Gershwin and Jimi Hendrix. Who knows where Gershwin died on the 11th of July of 1937. He had written hundreds of great songs. He had written Rhapsody in Blue and American in Paris, Concerto in F, and of course Porgy and Bess. He was a challenger, a risk taker. So was Jimi Hendrix. You know something, that Gershwin could easily have wound up in rock and roll. He could have forecast it. He could have contributed to it. He could have changed our way of thinking musically.
But just thinking of Rhapsody in Blue, you're absolutely right. It was revolutionary almost.
Well, think of what Jimi Hendrix might have done had he lived, I think, aside from the people I've just mentioned, that the most enduring musical personality of dignity and clarity is Frank Sinatra. And I feel that Sinatra's influence on rock musicians, and I once had a little talk with Jim Morrison about this. I simply asked him, who do you listen to? And he said, well, after Sinatra, who? Who do you mean, in effect? I was very pleased. Sinatra is now an older guy, and he hardly makes any records anymore, but he was very much a part of my program, and I'm very grateful to Varner Paulson, who was the general manager of the station for many years, and to Mel Karmazin, who followed Varner, for allowing on an essentially rock, folk, jazz station the voice of Sinatra to appear with regularity. Those gentlemen could have said to me, Jonathan, we think you're terrific, we like you on the station, but Sinatra doesn't fit. But they didn't say that. They said, okay, just do what you think best, let's see how it works. I always felt it worked, and here is an example of a song that we all know from Judy Collins, written by Stephen Sondheim. This is the only Sinatra record with just a piano. It's a studio record, Scotty, which is unusual in that he speaks at the beginning of it. It's not a live performance. It's a studio record made on the 5th of February, 1976, about 5 months before I left WNEW-FM. Then it was released about a year later. That is absolutely beautiful. Listen to this older man singing with great... This is soul singing. This is as much as Stevie Wonder, as much as Ray Charles, as much as Jimmy Reed, as much as anyone in this room. Here's a soul singer.
This is a song about a couple of adult people who have spent, quite a long time together, till one day one of them gets restless and decides to leave. Whether it's the man or woman who left is unimportant. It's a breakup. And it's a lovely marriage of words and music, written by Stephen Sondheim. Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, and you in midair. Send in the clowns. Well, maybe next year. That's
Sinatra, and I just think that's absolutely beautiful.
There's songs made for him, and that's one of many. And he is.
You know, Scott, I've always felt there are only two kinds of music, good and bad, and that's good. You were asking about my theme song.
Yes, your theme.
And I thought I would just tell you, it's Carly Simon, a lot of people recognize Carly. It's a little jazz waltz that she wrote. And it's never been published or recorded, and I just thought it made a marvelous theme because it has a kind of a whimsical melancholy, which was attractive to me. Hey, and I'm very, very grateful for your invitation, and I've been looking forward to it all week. This station means a great deal to me and to everyone listening to it. And I'm delighted to have returned, however briefly. I could shoot my mouth off for hours, but at least you've afforded me the opportunity to come back and say thank you to all concerned, and especially to you, Scotty, who was and continues to be a very important part of my life.
Jonathan, I hope, and if it is next year at this time, we're probably not planning to do a lot for the 11th anniversary, but continue to do what we always have done. Trying to keep our ears tuned to the ground, best in music and that sort of thing. But possibly win the book. Would you come back?
Oh, I'll come back. I'll go anywhere. Right. I'll go on WPLJ if they ask me to promote my book right over there. I don't know who those guys are anymore. But I'll go over. No one. See, that's the thing. That's the thing about WNEW-FM. The consistency of the people. Pete Fornatel, Dave Herman, Allison Steele, Dennis Elsis, and everyone concerned, specifically Scott Muni. You people, and up until the time I left, myself included, we were here, and we stuck it out. I don't know of any other radio station in this country that has been as consistent in performance and in personality. And that says a lot for the station and for its very shrewd management, who recognized through all of the years to leave well enough alone. Thank you, Scotty.
Thank you, Jonathan. And I think what Jonathan has said says it. We don't leave out our audience, and you are our audience, and of course you are what we have become, and you have put us here, and we intend to, I hope, remain what you expect us to be, a bit unpredictable, a bit experimental, a bit familiar, and most of all friendly and honest, and the ability with your help to help other people and to enjoy music and the words that people have to say together.
It's Thank my you, understanding you have a surprise.
That will be in just a moment or two at WNEW-FM New York.
Ladies and gentlemen.